Welcome to Conversations on Healthcare with Mark Maselli and Margaret Flinter, a weekly show where we speak to the top thought leaders in health innovation, health policy, care delivery, and the great minds who are shaping the healthcare of the future. This week, Mark and Margaret speak with Dr. Patrick Carroll, Division Vice President and Chief Medical Officer for Walgreens Healthcare, where he oversees the retail health clinic business in one of the nation's largest pharmacy chains, which are increasingly going to become a point of care for the American healthcare consumer. Lori Robertson also checks in. The managing editor of FactCheck.org looks at misstatements spoken about health policy in the public domain, separating the faith from the facts. And we end with a bright idea that's improving health and well-being in everyday lives. If you have comments, please email us at chcradio@chc1.com or find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And you can also hear us by asking Alexa to play the program Conversations on Healthcare. Now, stay tuned for our interview with Dr. Patrick Carroll, Chief Medical Officer for Walgreens Healthcare.
Hey, we're speaking today with Dr. Patrick Carroll, Division Vice President and Chief Medical Officer for Walgreens Healthcare, a division of Walgreens Boots Alliance, a major international pharmaceutical manufacturing and distribution conglomerate. Dr. Carroll oversees the retail clinic business, as well as clinical programs and health systems alliance in the United States. Previously, Dr. Carroll was Chief Medical Officer of Integrated Care Partners at Hartford Healthcare and was also Chief Medical Officer for Hartford Healthcare's Medicare Shared Savings Program. He earned his medical degree from Dartmouth Medical School, did his residency in family medicine at Middlesex Hospital in Connecticut. Dr. Carroll, welcome to Conversations on Healthcare.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you know, I don't think a month or two goes by where we're not reading on the front page of the trade papers that there's a merger or an innovative partnership that's shaking up the healthcare landscape. We saw Aetna and CVS, Amazon and PillPack, and we see that Amazon, Berkshire Hathaway, and JP Morgan Chase just brought on Atul Gawande, Cigna and Express Scripts, and certainly Walgreens Boots Alliance, as your parent company is known, has been pursuing its own approach to this quest to expand health services, having recently acquired some 1,600 Rite Aid pharmacies. I wonder if you could share with our listeners your thought about what these trends speak to, and also how Walgreens is using its market presence to have an impact on the transformation of care delivery.
I've been practicing in primary care for 29 years. I actually still volunteer one Saturday month at a community health center in downtown Chicago. So as a family physician, the traditional practice mode was, you know, 8 to 5, you delivered health care, you saw your 25 to 30 patients per day, you had a panel of 3,000 patients of all ages, you know, I would say from nursery to nursing home, and on weekends, you had some limited hours, you had after-hour call services. But it was really a very traditional model of primary care. And so I think what we're looking at today is a couple of trends that are really shaking up healthcare. The one challenge, quite honestly, is a shortage of physicians, particularly by 2030. It's estimated we're going to be down 130,000 physicians. So access to care is a real challenge for consumers across this country, particularly with an aging population and the increased prevalence of chronic diseases. So one of the ways that we can answer this challenge of access is really to provide care at sites in your community pharmacy locations across the country, in addition to bring in digital health care into the health ecosystem. So at Walgreens, the core of our strategy is that intersection between digital and physical access points. You know, the 93 to 9400 stores that we have that are really out of the health system's powers and into the community. In addition, we have many digital assets that really connects the consumer through our website and through our apps to direct them to digital health assets and other access points of care with both health system partners and in our store. And so what we've done very intentionally is partner with either health systems or national providers of health care to bring services into our stores. So we are embarking on a pilot around Medicare Advantage clinics in the Kansas City market that's been announced with partners in primary care. In addition, we've set up 15 urgent cares around the country in a partnership with MedExpress in our stores. We are partnered with 13 health systems around retail clinics in our stores where they actually run the retail clinics in their market. In addition, we run over 160 retail clinics by our own model through Walgreens. And then we also offer services around lab through a partnership with LabCorp. In addition, on the digital side, we've created this application called Find Care Now, where in markets across the country, a consumer can log on to a Walgreens website, click on the Find Care Now application, and then be connected into health assets in Walgreens or with partnerships, whether that be through digital health or through health system partnerships. So it's really around consumer-centric care and access points to care, particularly in a way that is as price transparent as possible, because as you know, more and more consumers are paying high deductible health plans and they are paying more out of pocket for their care.
So Dr. Carroll, you just gave a comprehensive description of everything you're doing, and I'm thinking maybe our health professionals in the audience got it, and I think a lot of consumers are scratching their head going, what, urgent care, retail care, virtual care, primary care, right, on-demand care? I wonder if we could back it up a little bit, and I think if we looked linearly at the evolution, you know, we saw maybe 15 years ago, MinuteClinic, you're sick, we're quick. I think people kind of got that.
Right.
And then, you know, maybe in the last couple of years, we've seen urgent care clinics popping up on almost as many corners as there are Walgreens stores. But help our listeners understand, what is the model of care that Walgreens is seeking to establish? Is it a whole lot of variety, or is there an underlying kind of model of care or healthcare infrastructure that you're looking to embed into the healthcare landscape?
Right. So that's a great question. What we're creating is a healthcare hub where consumers can access services in their community. And I did list quite a variety of services, but consumers have different needs. Take your diabetic patient who is in and out of a Walgreens. Our studies show on average 30 to 60 times per year, picking up prescriptions, picking up test strips. The convenience for that consumer to actually access lab services through a partnership with LabCorp and get that hemoglobin A1C, that diabetes test drawn, is really powerful. It's convenient because that's where they're picking up their scripts, and it provides an access to lab services. In addition, as we build out more of a primary care practices in our stores, not only could that consumer access pharmacy services, lab services, but they potentially could see their primary care physician right in our store. So I think the way to think of it is really access points to care, really focus also on the adult population with an increasing incidence of some of these conditions such as diabetes and hypertension and elevated cholesterol, to be able to give them a way to get into the system. It's really difficult to navigate healthcare these days as a consumer and, quite honestly, as a physician. So I think we're trying to simplify it and provide those access points.
Well, you know, Dr. Carroll, I was thinking as you were talking earlier about the trends that are shaking up the healthcare environment, and certainly one of the great unmet needs is certainly behavioral health. And you've partnered with a telemedicine entity, Breakthrough, an MD Live telemedicine company, to increase mental health screening and to improve access to treatment. And you mentioned earlier that you have an online platform at Walgreens. But I was trying to think through this sort of waterfront, if you will, of telehealth, telemedicine, virtual care. Walk us through that model as well, and how effective you think this will be for the populations that you're trying to serve and deliver access and also modernize the delivery system as well.
Right. I think the promise for telehealth and digital health, virtual health, is the fact that you can access that care at home. You can access it at a Walgreens store in Manhattan. We have a relationship with New York Presbyterian where in our stores they have set up telehealth kiosk where someone can come in and get a visit in our stores directly into the emergency room physicians for multiple conditions, and have peripherals such as a pulse oximeter. oximeter to check oxygenation, blood pressure, temperature, and provide that connection. So when we look at kind of that digital telehealth landscape, it really provides many solutions at scale. I think a particularly powerful solution in that area is to our behavioral health needs. As you referenced, it's a major issue in this country, accessing behavioral health services. So what we've created through a partnership with MDLive, but also through the Mental Health Association, is you can go on our website and actually get a behavioral health screen, particularly focused on depression screen, and then connect either with a virtual visit through the MDLive platform or actually get connected through to counselors or an access point to behavioral health care. I think many other systems, you know, health systems have looked at how they're going to open up access to a really limited resource, which are behavioral health specialists, and a growing need for it among the U.S. population. So it's just one of the solutions, and we think that that virtual solution is a really powerful tool when we are talking about behavioral health needs.
Dr. Carroll, you know, there's so many services that we recognize can be provided virtually or digitally now, but some still seem to require contact between the patient and a healthcare person. And one of those is certainly immunizations and vaccines. At least until now, we're not talking about them being self-administered by patients, maybe someday. And, you know, we think about the flu shot every year and people are used to that. But, you know, as it's gotten so expensive and also very difficult to maintain the supply chain, if you will, with refrigeration and temperature controls and so forth, I know even primary care offices are relying sometimes on the pharmacies to be the people who stock very expensive vaccines like the shingles vaccine. And we're seeing that more and more now with some of the hepatitis vaccines. And then you have additional challenges in terms of patients really getting this information into their record. So if they have a primary care provider outside of the pharmacies, they can have that information organized. Tell us a little bit about how you see this. I guess I would call it almost a public health element of the work that you're doing. Do you see this as a fundamental component of the work you're doing in the retail pharmacies as well?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad you brought up the whole immunization access. We've been doing that at Walgreens for years. We have our pharmacists give multiple types of vaccinations. Of course, many of them are around flu vaccination. Also around pneumococcus vaccinations, prevent pneumococcal disease, and a wide array of immunizations. And to me, it's a valuable service for consumers, and it really gets to one of the opportunities in healthcare, as we have to go beyond just medical providers such as nurse practitioners and physicians and physician assistants to deliver health care. We need to bring the pharmacy resource, labor force, into health care. And I think our first major entry was quite honestly through immunizations. But what we also see in value with what the pharmacists do are working with customers on major issues such as medication adherence, particularly in those patients who are on 3 to 4 to 5 or more medications. So the ability to deliver some adherence programs at our pharmacy, and quite honestly, when we start having more of these access points through primary care, retail clinics to connect with that pharmacist around adherence measures, we think it's just good healthcare and really getting pharmacists involved in delivering health care to our population.
We're speaking today with Dr. Patrick Carroll, Division Vice President and Chief Medical Officer for Walgreens Healthcare, a division of Walgreens Boots Alliance, a major international pharmaceutical manufacturing and distribution conglomerate. You know, I was thinking, Dr. Carroll, as you were saying, that you are working and others are to bring pharmacy and pharmacist into the healthcare system. And thinking about the cost of healthcare and, you know, it seems to be growing at unsustainable rates, or at least we've been hearing that for the last probably 20 years. And the pharmaceutical share has risen. It's somewhere between 9 and 10%. I've seen some projections that by 2024 it will continue to grow. And I'm wondering if you could talk about the value proposition for our listeners and for what you were saying were valuable services for consumers that are coming out of the industry. Talk about the benefits that match up to the cost that seem to be an ever-increasing share of the healthcare pie.
Yeah, I think what I'd like to do to kind of flesh that out is to look at a patient who has diabetes. And what we know is adherence is not great among diabetic patients. We've seen studies where 50% of diabetics are not compliant with their medication regime. We also know there's a direct tie-in in terms of non-adherence and increased medical costs. So these are patients who, for whatever reason, whether it be costs, whether it be lack of understanding of the medications they're on, are not taking them appropriately, and that leads to complications in terms of admissions to hospitals, emergency room visits, and some of the medical complications of diabetes, the retinopathy, you know, the neuropathy, the nerve problems, the kidney disease. So anytime we can impact adherence and improve adherence, sometimes simply as much as explaining with our pharmacist to the customer about why the medication they're on, what the side effects are, and how to work with those patients to increase adherence and then get that information back to primary care physicians, we see that as really value add. Another feature when we talk about bringing in digital, we have a program called Pharmacy Chat where over 12,000 chats are conducted per week. It's a pharmacist available 24/7 for customers who have questions about medications and side effects. They can go online and have that kind of virtual pharmacy chat with the pharmacist. And we have seen tie-in through all these tools and in terms of improving adherence, lowering costs, and really helping folks with some of these conditions that they're being treated for.
Hmm. Well, Dr. Carroll, you know, one of the marketing campaigns or slogans that I always personally liked about Walgreens was the one that says, "We're at the corner of happy and healthy." It always sounded like a very upbeat kind of slogan. But as you so well know, as a family practice physician and somebody who trained in that model, all is neither happy nor healthy in a lot of neighborhoods across America, including, I'm sure, neighborhoods where Walgreens has stores. And you know, we really can't avoid in healthcare and really have had to embrace addressing these social determinants of health, the housing instability, insufficient money, food scarcity, safety issues. And these are things that accompany the patient often with the kinds of issues you were talking about, whether it's diabetes or anything else, really. It's not quick. It's not easy. It takes coordinating with resources in your community. And I would bet, based on your training and experience, that you've had to give some thought to this as you develop this healthcare model within Walgreens. So talk with us a little bit about that. Where does Walgreens get involved in helping address those social determinants of health or partnering with others in the community to do that?
You're right. And if you actually look at where we are in this country and our physical locations, we're in every type of neighborhood, high income to the lowest of income. We have actually a very robust spread in lower socioeconomic areas in this country of stores and locations. So our customers come from a real full continuum of economic backgrounds, and we are the community pharmacy in every community we serve. So our pharmacists day in and day out are working with customers who are struggling with copays, and we work with them around copay assistance programs, particularly around specialty medications. We have community specialty pharmacies spread across the country. The cost of specialty meds are really high for these patients with their chronic medical conditions. You know, the HIV patient who needs medications, the person with a chronic inflammatory disease. We work with them around copays, copay assistance, adherence programs in every type of community around the country. So we truly are the neighborhood pharmacy, and we feel like we bring value to our customers because of our locations across the country.
You know, Dr. Carroll, I want to talk a little bit about genetics and genomics. I think many of our longtime listeners know that about 2 years ago, Dr. Collins at NIH launched the All of Us initiative, and we were fortunate to be one of the 10 health systems chosen to start the laying out of the IRB and working through all of the playbooks and the processes. And the hope here is to get 1 million lives and follow them longitudinally. A much more expanded Framingham study, if you will, but really looking at the genetic information and gathering information on electronic health records and social determinants as well. I understand that Walgreens is going to play an important role going forward in this initiative, and I'm wondering if you could talk to our listeners a little bit about the work that you're going to be doing in this.
Right. I'm glad you brought that up. So today we actually are part of the All of Us initiative in that Precision Medicine Institute initiative. And we do that through participation at selected clinic markets where we still run clinics, such as in Houston. We have this up and running in several other markets. So we are involved with that initiative, and it's really exciting work. So that's what we do today. We see the future is going to be very focused on pharmacogenomics, making sure we're matching up the right medications, particularly these very costly specialty medications, to the appropriate patients. As we talk about the lab services we're bringing into our stores, we think that's a nice synergy also, where you know, this lab testing that can be used in the area of pharmacogenomics and clinical research is going to be available at our stores, and it is today. So we see that that's a really growing area and an exciting area of where healthcare is going. We're doing some of that today through our involvement, and we see much more of that occurring at Walgreens in the future.
We've been speaking today with Dr. Patrick Carroll, Division Vice President and Chief Medical Officer for Walgreens Healthcare, a division of Walgreens Boots Alliance, one of the largest pharmacy chains in the country, where he oversees the retail clinic business as well as clinical programs and health system alliances. You can learn more about Dr. Carroll's work by going to WalgreensBootsAlliance.com or follow them on Twitter at Walgreens. Pat, thank you so much for your work and for joining us on Conversations on Healthcare today.
Great. It's great to reconnect with folks from Connecticut.
Conversations on Healthcare, we want our audience to be truly in the know when it comes to the facts about healthcare reform and policy. Lori Robertson is an award-winning journalist and managing editor of FactCheck.org, a nonpartisan, nonprofit consumer advocate for voters that aim to reduce the level of deception in U.S. politics. Lori, what have you got for us this week?
President Donald Trump recently said, quote, "We've got the cleanest country in the planet right now." He was talking about clean air and clean water, but rankings compiled by researchers at Yale and Columbia universities say otherwise. Out of 180 countries studied, the U.S. comes in at number 27 on the 2018 Environmental Performance Index, which scores countries based on their performances in a number of categories covering environmental health and ecosystem vitality. On air quality, the U.S. ranked 10th, and on water and sanitation, it placed 29th. Trump made his comments in a campaign-style rally in West Virginia, saying, "There's nobody cleaner than us." Trump provided no evidence, and the White House didn't provide us with any when we asked. but there are several countries that are cleaner than the U.S. overall and in specific categories, according to the most recent EPI report. The report, which is released biennially in even-numbered years, was produced jointly by Yale and Columbia in collaboration with the World Economic Forum. This year, the U.S. ranked 10th in air quality. While it was tied with 11 other countries for first in household air pollution, it was 88th in exposure to particulate matter. The U.S. ranked 29th overall in water and sanitation. It was tops in drinking water, along with 9 other nations, but 31st in sanitation. So, contrary to what the president said, there are countries that are cleaner than the U.S. And that's my fact check for this week. I'm Lori Robertson, managing editor of FactCheck.org.
FactCheck.org is committed to factual accuracy from the country's major political players and is a project of the Annenberg Public Policy Center at the University of Pennsylvania. If you have a fact that you'd like checked, email us at chcradio.com. We'll have FactCheck.org's Lori Robertson check it out for you here on Conversations on Healthcare.
Each week, Conversations highlights a bright idea about how to make wellness a part of our communities and everyday lives.
The global rise of diabetes and obesity are threatening to cripple healthcare systems in coming decades. Both diseases are largely driven by behaviors, and one of the most challenging behaviors for clinicians and patients to monitor is accurate measurement of food intake, as well as its nutritional value. That has proven especially challenging for researchers seeking to gain accurate insights into how food consumption behaviors are driving these conditions.
We do know that people who track their food intake, that does influence what they eat. That's been proven, you know, over many years with the sort of Weight Watchers and so on, that, and actually people lose weight when they record what they're eating. But we also know from research that if people are telling us what they eat, they tend to underestimate that intake as well.
Dr. Janet Cady directs the Nutritional Epidemiological Group in the School of Food Science and Nutrition at the University of Leeds, England. They created their own online tool, MyFood24, which has extensive nutritional and caloric information on tens of thousands of commonly consumed foods.
So our database has about 45,000 foods in it. We've taken the back-of-pack label information and we've mapped it to generic items so that we could infill, if you like, the missing nutrients that aren't on the back-of-pack in order to have a complete database of nutrients and foods. There's over 100 different nutrients, including various amino acids and fatty acids and so on, which we can report on, the macronutrients and the micronutrients, the vitamins and minerals we can report on that some patients might be short on.
Dr. Cady thought there should be an easy-to-navigate online tool that provides a seamless interface for researchers and study participants to use.
We still have to get people to type in the actual type of the food it was, give us an estimate of amount, and we've got quite sophisticated ways of helping people to do that. And then you just tally that up for the day, really. Basically, you just type in everything you've eaten, and then it will tell you nutrients that you've consumed.
Researchers are lauding the immediacy and the accuracy of the tool, as well as additional granular nutrition information they are able to assemble rather easily. Dr. Cady says while it's being used primarily by researchers now, she's hoping to advance this tool into clinical settings, providing clinicians and patients struggling with diabetes or weight management a more accurate assessment tool for recording their nutritional intake.
I am a little frustrated that so much research resource has gone into developing new technologies for measuring DNA, genomics, that sort of thing, and so little has gone into measuring behaviors like dietary intake, physical activity, where we could learn so much more about observational epidemiology. So this project is a step in the right direction.
MyFood24, a comprehensive online dietary recall tool, providing researchers and their study participants an easy and more accurate way to track nutritional intake data, leading to a better understanding of nutrition's role in disease and weight management. Now that's a bright idea. You've been listening to Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Mark Maselli.
And I'm Margaret Flinter.
Peace and health.
Conversations on Healthcare is recorded at WESU at Wesleyan University. streaming live at chcradio.com, iTunes, or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you have comments, please email us at chcradio@chc1.com or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We love hearing from you. The show is brought to you by the Community Health Center.